The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager.
Hey there. Hey, welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. So glad you could be with me. This is your host, Andrew Horowitz. And it is now episode number, what are we at, 49? Oh my, it's about a year since we've been doing this now. And we have 49 episodes in the bag, so to speak. And we've been talking about things from, technology to finance and bank bailouts and all the way back. And right now, we're obviously head deep in some of that. But anyway, so what we talk about here is you, your money, and, you know, kind of the things that are important. We learn a bit. We kind of talk a bit. We spend some time with others, guests, experts in the field, and that's what we do with the Disciplined Investor. So thanks a lot for joining me. It's been, as we have said before, a very disturbing time. But nonetheless, we're going to try to make some heads or tails of it today, because today I have a guest, Mike Huckman, who is the CNBC. He's a pharmaceutical and biotech analyst or reporter for CNBC. Great guy. I have about five or six questions, because have you looked at the pharmaceutical area? I mean, it is horrible. I mean, you question Merck is just falling off a cliff. You have stocks like Dendrion who, you know, where you saw this kind of crazy FDA thing go on where they wouldn't approve their Provenge drug for prostate cancer because, well, it seems that one of the guys on the FDA panel, the advisory panel, was actually on the board of a competing company. Hard to believe that it's possible that they would actually potentially, you know, cause death because of money, but I guess nothing's impossible these days. We're going to also talk about some of the things that were actually on some of the things I wrote about this week. As I told you before, thedisciplinedinvestor.com is a place that you really need to go, because it has so much of the things that you asked me for, and analysis and news and things that I write about on an ongoing basis. And that's in between shows. I put some things up with something called Naked Shorts. And no, that is not, even though I have a picture of Paris Hilton halfway naked on that, just to bring out the commentary of what that's all about. It's about manipulation in the markets. It's all about how some of these companies are going in and shorting stocks and never actually covering them. And essentially what they could do is break the back of a stock. Naked Shorts. You really need to take a look at that. There's one particular thing that you need to, if you have a half hour or so, there's a presentation that I put on there from a gentleman who did it. It's called The Dark Side of the Looking Glass. And it's a PowerPoint presentation that I would spend some time in, and do yourself a favor, check that out. It is quite frightening. I also talked about the Visa, the paradox of the Visa IPO, because you know, that IPO was at a very strange time. If you know anything about initial public offerings, as we do now with the Zach Zone that comes to us every other week, we're doing it right now. Or if there's something more important, of course, we'll bring that with Zach Scheidt from ZachStocks.com. And the IPO of Visa was quite a paradox, wasn't it? You had a time when there was probably one of the worst times to bring an IPO to market. At the same time, we had a time when it was the best time, because if you look at this, the offering actually generated a windfall for Visa's thousands of member banks. There was J.P. Morgan got about $1.25 billion. Bank of America, National City, Citigroup, U.S. Bancorp, Wells Fargo. All these names got a chunk of money from this. What a better time, or wasn't there no better time than right now to give a cash infusion to these banks and these brokerage houses, because they need it more than ever with what's going on. And really, we're seeing that Wall Street firms got about $500 million, but yet at the same time, 75% of the recent IPOs that came to market or were coming to market were pulled. They were postponed or canceled, but this thing was actually stepped up a day. Amazing. It was a great IPO. It came out. It went up 10 or so points. It kept going up. And it's just, you know, people are saying it's still a great piece, which is going to be at contrary or contradiction to what I'm going to talk about today, a credit company that I think is really going to see some problems. Of course, we saw just a tremendous move in the markets after we saw that 75 basis cut, plus, which the Fed is doing, and the bailout supposedly last week. But, you know, I have a theory about something I'm going to share with you in a minute and talk to you about some of the other things that have been happening over the week. So with that in mind, we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to tell you a couple of things that you need to know. And when we come back, I'm going to talk to you about Capital One Financial and tell you about Interactive Brokers. And I'm going to tell you about my theory on what's happening right now in these markets when it comes to some of the select financials and give you some food for thought in terms of what to do now moving forward with this crazy thing we call our stock market and our economy. So stick around. We'll be right back on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Hi, this is Tim Knight from theslopeofhope.com, and you're listening to The Disciplined Investor.
Looking for answers to today's complex financial markets? Then be sure to get your copy of The Disciplined Investor, Essential Strategies for Success, your all-in-one guide to investing. Order now at thedisciplinedinvestor.com or your favorite bookstore. The Disciplined Investor. Together, we will reach success.
All right, welcome back. This is Andrew Horowitz, The Disciplined Investor. And lots happening. I had a good amount of press last week. Was in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Financial Times a couple of times last week. And actually just three or four radio shows last week. They all were coming at me on some of the things I was talking about with this market. Seems that many of the things that I've been writing about have been pretty accurate, it seems, right now at least. And I feel good about that. But at the same time, it's very painful for many because they're not heeding the warnings of what's going on. You know, I've been talking about it and people writing me, Andrew, why are you so frustrated? I'm frustrated because the markets have been very brutal to people. And I think that really a lot of the information hasn't come out as we need to see it right now. Because it's being hidden. It's being, you know, look what happened to Bear overnight. The thing imploded essentially overnight. And you had people left and right saying, you know, a Bear's a great play. It's still, you know, we saw the Bear Stearns president CEO say on Wednesday prior to this, it's going down. Jim Cramer, it's still a buy. These have all been documented. So who are we to be sitting here thinking that we know what's actually going on, right? I mean, that's the thing that concerns me. But one of the things I will tell you, and the way you can get a little bit of a benefit and understanding what's happening and what's going on. You know, what I try to do is through The Disciplined Investor, my book, Essential Strategies for Success, I try to give you the tools. And I talk about it because I'll be honest with you, that's how this whole thing works. You know, this whole podcast is a freebie and I ask for your support in one way, very simply. You know, go over to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, pick up a copy of this book. It's $19.95 or $17.95, something like that, discounted. The Audible version is coming shortly. And, you know, there's 10 chapters here that goes over each and every piece of the markets. How to. We talk about quantitative investing, technical analysis, fundamentals, risk management. Why mutual funds, annuities and GICs, tools of the trade. I give you exact places that you need to look on an ongoing basis from the morning, evening, and night, what papers to read, what magazines to stay away from, what tools on the web to use. And then we wrap it all up with a discussion about, you know, asset allocation. Now, for those of you here that are listening to me, that are trying to learn and understand, I mean, think about it for a second, $20. I mean, come on, you can go spend $20, support me, you know, and at the same time, forget about that. Give yourself just an unbelievable education because I really, with 248 pages, I took analogy and metaphor and created an understandable way for you to invest and gave you the tools and techniques to do so through the various free and maybe some low-cost alternatives. And you are going to be armed in this next coming turn when we eventually do and armed to protect your portfolio on the down. So on the up, you'll be able to gather the up, and on the down, you'll be able to protect yourself as well. So with that in mind, do yourself a favor. Listen, support me. I appreciate it. That's how we really, you know, keep this thing going. The Disciplined Investor over at Amazon, your local bookstore or Barnes & Noble, anywhere online. I mean, and I appreciate it very much. Thanks a lot. All right. Let's talk about this whole idea of credit card mess. I want you to think for a second about your credit card history and what you've actually been experiencing and thinking about credit cards. And I think about what's happening from an investment standpoint. I start looking at the way Americans actually spend, because we're really dealing with, obviously, our markets here. And what has been a past pattern has been this. Whereas you would absolutely pay off your mortgage first, and then you would maybe pay off your car, and then pay off your credit cards, that has actually switched of late. In addition, let me give you some more data here. In addition, we're seeing an incredible rise of what's called revolving debt credit cards. We're seeing this huge move up in credit cards in terms of the way that they're being used in order to really take the place of the ATM that we used to have as the house, because people here don't seem to want to take a, you know, a realization check that they can't keep spending on credit. Now, at the same time, people need to live. I need to eat. You need to eat. We need to have transportation. We need to, you know, basically send our kids to school and get groceries. I mean, we need all that, right? Where are people going to get the money from? Right now, Capital One Financial, symbol COF, has been, you know, they're in the model of lending money in three segments. You do the U.S. card subsegment, domestic consumers, et cetera, auto financial subsegment, which includes obviously automobiles and financing through maybe some other of the majors, and global financial services, where they have international lending, small business lending, installment loans, et cetera. Now, the first two, all three, but the first two are a big concern of mine. What's really perplexing to me is that Capital One on February 1st in a statement said they're raising their quarterly dividend by about 2.5, 3 cents, we'll call it, and they're doing a $2 billion stock buyback. How is that possible? They're going to pull back 10% of their total shares. Now, if you remember, I have talked time and time again about my concerns about stock buybacks as a shield, a kind of a smoke screen into what's really going on, because by stock being bought back by a company, you know what happens? The shares are retired, or at least pulled back. Earnings per share is now divisible by the new amount of shares, thus bringing up the EPS, or the earnings per share. So now when you look at the numbers come out the next quarter and we say, oh, they beat by 3 cents. Wait a minute. Is it really beating by 3 cents? Or maybe they only made it even or lost money because the EPS calculation has been changed. In addition to that, why in this environment would they pay a higher dividend? How could they do that? By share buybacks, there's less shares outstanding. Thus, this doesn't cost them anything. It doesn't cost them any money to do this new dividend. So let's wrap that one point up. Why would they do this? They do it because it looks good. It looks good to, you know, have a better EPS into what's going to be, as I see it, a big problem. It looks good to have a better dividend because people won't sell so fast because they realize that they need the income. The way I see it, this press release that we kind of looked at here from them recently about showing that they're increasing their dividends, and yet they don't seem to have a lot of increases in their problematic loans, as they show it from their press release, is very much concerning. Because inside, if you look a little bit further, delinquency rates are on the rise dramatically. The mortgage and the housing market is just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to credit. And who's going to be really hurt, it seems to me, of the credit card issuers. And if you just take a look at any research, it is proving that time and time again. And we're seeing that really in the economy starting to happen. But what I really think is the biggest interest of this whole situation is, as we are finding that there's easy credit available, you know, that it's we're being told that, at least by the Fed, right? We're finding that less and less people can actually get credit cards. And when people have credit cards and they increase their debt dramatically, they're used to turning them and refinancing them. Now, you tell me, what happened in the refinancing boom of 2007 and 2008? It dropped off to nothing because it wasn't worth what they were worth. And as people are having more and more problems with their credit, they're going to have less opportunity to refinance, and credit card companies will no longer be able to give the kind of credit that they were giving to people, and they're no longer going to take the risk they were taking. That being the case, this seems to be a time bomb absolutely waiting to implode. Now, the stock share price has been actually doing okay. We've been shorting this recently, very recently. We just started shorting this, and the stock price has been actually moving up with all the news that's gone on. I think it's an interesting time to start taking a short position in this. Now, again, disclosure, we as a company, Horowitz, a company, investment advisors, have been shorting this position. But we started last week with this because when I looked at the research, I said, wait a minute, something here doesn't make any sense. Credit cards are not collateralized, are they? No, they're not collateralized. We had problems with collateralized debt and the problems with people not paying on collateralized debt. What happens when they have to go after people with uncollateralized debt that don't have any assets to really give them anyway if they wanted to sue them? Huge problems. There's a piece that I just wrote up on the web, The Disciplined Investor, called Double Whammy: Credit Card Companies Are Next. Take a look at that and tell me what you think. Comments are very much requested. Make sure that you do comment on the site. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. It's a community. I want to hear from you, right? I've told you before, ask me at AskAndrew at thedisciplinedinvestor.com is the address to actually ask me any questions. And you can call. We put the listener questions on the air, as you see. Here is the number. It's toll-free, 877-623-8473. Call in. Don't be shy. That's what I'm here for. The next thing I want to talk about very quickly, we'll get into this interview, is the whole idea of what is gone on with the second-tier brokers. You know, we saw, obviously, the meltdown with companies like MF Global. We saw the meltdown last week with some of the, IBKR, Interactive Brokers. We saw the futures and commodities brokers just get hammered last week. I don't know if you saw it. It was ugly, really ugly. Interactive Brokers, from everything that I can see about them, doesn't have the problems with subprime debt. They're a transaction-based company, very much like a Visa or a MasterCard. That's how they make their money, from transactions. Sure, they may have some bad issues on the books. They may have some losses they took. They don't, have the kind of situation where they wrapped paper and resold it like a Bear or a Lehman or a Goldman, which the latter, I believe, was just last weekend, they were knocked down by S&P. Which, of course, S&P has been great at giving us these incredibly quick and timely reports and change of rating. But nonetheless, IBKR, take a look at that. That is a really big concern of mine from the aspect of, why did it fall? In other words, I like this stock. We're buying this. We're building a position in this stock, because IBKR, Interactive Brokers, seems to be one of these companies that really doesn't have a lot of these problems being lumped in together with much of the bad. And every once in a while, there's a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to, where we can invest and make some money, whereas we're seeing a market inefficiency. And it seems to be Interactive Brokers from the financial side of things. I am on huge warning. I am on awareness that if the markets start to tail off here, and listen, hopefully, I'm hoping, I've gotten a lot of emails, by the way. Some of you haven't written me. I'd love to hear your stories. If you're making money, if you're whatever, ask Andrew at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Send it to me. I want to hear what's going on. But so many people have told me that I've saved them a lot of money because I've been ranting about this since June or so. Sorry about that, but I think it's very timely and we need to do so. But nonetheless, be safe right now, gang, because we need to see the follow-through on a consistent basis, because when the next thing that drops, the next concern that happens, I think there could be a real fall from here. Wrote a piece on a picture or a chart tells 1,000 points. I wrote about if we break support right now on the Dow or the S&P, and right now it's about at 11,635 on the Dow. If we breach that, we could see 1,000 point slide down towards 10,683. And I wrote about this on, when did I write this? The date was, let's see, March 11th. Okay, check that out. The other thing is, did you pick up my chicken company? Did you buy that company, Sanderson Farms? I told you to buy it about 33. You know where it is today? It's about 40. And I told you that also a few different times, but I posted it officially on March 11th in the afternoon. And since then, the stock has gone up really very nicely, broke out from its base and moved up right past where we thought it would be, our top-end target, about 46 right now. But again, these are things that you'll find on the website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. If you don't know how to use RSS feeds and bookmark it and get that kind of continually streaming to you, we could email it to you to sign up. And there's a place to say, hey, email me the posts when they come up, and you'll automatically be emailed. Lots and lots of things coming up. And again, those reports, they're all for you. Write me, call me, let me know. We'll be right back with Mike Huckman of CNBC on pharmaceuticals and biotechs on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. All right, we're here as promised with Mike Huckman, and he is CNBC's pharmaceutical reporter, and he covers drug biotechnology, medical devices, industries, et cetera. And he works out of the main headquarters of CNBC. Mike, welcome aboard. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So let's talk about biotechnology. Let's talk about what's going on, because I guess we'll talk about a couple of companies. Maybe we'll start off with Merck. What's going on? I mean, is it just that there's a Vioxx issue, a Democratic presidential scare, and what's happening there? It's fallen off the vine.
Yeah, well, obviously with Merck, we're talking about traditional big pharma, and I think you've seen that stock, in addition to Shearing Plough, I might mention, really pull in over the last 6 weeks or so, when it had these what were perceived to be negative results on their cholesterol drug called Vytorin, which is a combination of Zetia and Zocor. And a lot of people, many analysts say, a lot of investors overreacted to the results of that study that, as we know them so far. So I really think that that's what's been pressuring Merck. And if you want to broaden it out to Big Pharma in general, you've got, you know, ongoing safety issues, regulatory concerns, because the Food and Drug Administration is so unpredictable these days. People don't know when the next shoe is going to drop. And then, as you mentioned, you've got the looming presidential election, when most people seem to think that, you know, the Democrats are going to fully control Washington. But one thing I might briefly mention that I've kind of been keeping track of on the blog over the last couple of months is the Center for Responsive Politics maintains a website, a really valuable website called, I think, www.opensecrets.org, not .com, .org, and they monitor the campaign giving. And when it comes to pharmaceuticals giving, it's interesting to see how they're now giving more money or evenly splitting their money between Democrats and Republicans, when it used to be like 2-1 Republicans over Democrats. Mm. So you've got Senator Hillary Clinton and Senator Barack Obama out there on the stump, you know, saying the drug company's this and the drug company's that, and we're going to stop the influence of the drug companies, and on and on and on. But when you look at the numbers on this website, they're at the top of the list. They are at the top of the list, number one and number two, for receiving money from the drug companies and from other healthcare-related companies.
You know, it's unbelievable. I wrote a piece this last week, and I called the Milli Vanilli government. You know, Milli Vanilli was that unfortunate episode where we had those lip syncers.
Who could forget Milli Vanilli?
And I kind of pasted over the faces Bush and Bernanke, and I said, our government's kind of like, I see all their lips moving, and I see all these people talking, but what's coming out is not really, you know, kind of in line. It's not in sync to what's going, you know, and so what you're saying, the same thing here.
Yeah, and Andrew, the other factor that I failed to mention, but I think is pretty obvious to most people who probably listen in, is that there's a relative dearth, emphasis on the word relative, a relative dearth of products in the drug development pipelines of these companies. And that's why, and perhaps this is a segue into biotech, that's why you're seeing the big pharmaceutical companies do more in licensing, do more partnerships, do more mergers and acquisitions with biotech right now.
Right. I'm going to just switch gears for a second, because I just thought of something that, you know, you were involved in this discussion with a gentleman, with Dennis Neal, I believe his name is, and a gentleman named Derek DeKoff.
Yes.
It was all about this drug called Chantix.
I think it was called Chantix.
And it was a neuro inhibitor of some sort regarding smoking. To be very honest with you, it really pissed me off, the discussion. I mean, it really kind of got me in a really bad way, because I just thought that Dennis was really a little bit abrupt with the guy. That's what my opinion of it.
Well, to give people some background, this is a relatively new growth driver for Pfizer, and it needs growth drivers probably more than any of the other big pharmas right now. It's recently come under a cloud of safety controversy for so-called neuropsychiatric side effects. There have been reports of suicides to the FDA. There have been reports of people thinking about killing themselves or attempting suicide. And this guy, Derek DeKoff, had written a really what I thought was interesting first-person account in New York Magazine recently, basically describing his experience on the drug and how it really sent him for a loop. And so I booked him on the show, and then, as you're referring to, Dennis Neal kind of interjected with his own line of questioning.
Yeah, I think it was interesting, though. I will tell you that it seemed, and I put that on my site, and I kind of really dug into him a little bit there, because I thought it was a little bit outside. I'm not here to talk to you about that, but I just thought it was interesting, because obviously there is some question, and you have on one side where a drug is released and available, and there's all these kind of potential side effects. And then let's talk about the subject of Adendrion, which is the wonder drug for prostate cancer that was looking like, wow, I mean, low side effects, if no side effects, a reasonable amount of potential opportunity, and then it just gets essentially shot down last year, right?
Yeah, and let me just say that wonder drug is your term, not mine.
No, I hear you.
Yeah, as you well know, there was an FDA advisory committee that voted 17-0 unanimously that this drug or therapeutic cancer vaccine, as it's technically referred to, is safe. And then the vote was 13-4 that it's effective. So everybody thought, okay, you know, with that kind of lopsided advisory committee vote, the FDA is, you know, it's pretty much a fait accompli that you know, the FDA is going to approve this product. Well, lo and behold, you know, the FDA went against those lopsided votes and decided not to approve it, at least for now, telling the company Dendrion, ticker DNDN, that it needs to wait until there are the results of an ongoing larger phase three or late stage clinical trial. And we could see those results, the company says, in the second half of this year. The FDA could approve the drug based on those interim results, they're called, if they're robust enough. In other words, if they show enough of a positive benefit for patients. Otherwise, the company says, we're now going to have to wait until the second half of next year if those interim results are not good enough.
But let's just dig into this a little bit more, because it wasn't just that. I can only get so close to this, right? And you can probably get just so close, maybe even closer. But what, you know, it was 13-4, but what about the 4? I mean, what was the story there? Wasn't there some story about, at least from where I read it was, there was a little bit of a conflict where the potential, this Dr. Sher, I believe, wasn't he on a competing company's board?
Yeah, well, not on the board, but you're talking about Dr. Howard Sher, and then there's also another doctor named Dr. Maha Hussein from the University of Michigan, and they were among two of the 4 no votes. They wrote letters that recently came out as part of a Freedom of Information Act request by people who are suing over what has happened with this drug called Provenge and Dendreon. They wrote letters to the FDA saying, here's why we voted against it, and here's why we think the agency shouldn't approve it. But what you're referring to is the fact that Dr. Howard Sher was the principal investigator. In other words, he was the leader of the clinical trial of a similar drug for prostate cancer. And that is the extent of its similarity, is that it's a drug for prostate cancer from a company called Novacea. And a lot of people were screaming, you know, allegations of conflict of interest, allegations of ethical violations. As I think you probably know, there was a request by a handful of congresspeople for the Ethics Committee to launch an investigation into what happened, but the leaders of that committee declined the request, saying they need to let this all play out first, and then maybe we'll see if we need to look into something.
So this discussion that I saw last week, where I kind of named an article "Spin No Spunk," where Dendreon came out with an announcement and seemed it was a little bit more of spin. I mean, what do you think about that?
I think I disagree with you to a certain extent, because it was a change to what's called the special protocol assessment, or the SPA or SPA, and this is kind of the ground rules and the criteria that the FDA and a company agree to ahead of a clinical trial. Here's what we might approve, the results that we might approve your product based on. This is how you should go about conducting your clinical trial. And the upshot, as I saw it, is that Dendreon was saying, okay, with these new ground rules that we've agreed to with the FDA, our timeline may be moved up by a year. So instead of 2010, we expect to see final results from this ongoing study in the second half of 2009. And for biotech investors, that's a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the whole point with Dendreon, with the big issue after they were obviously let down, was that how long can they last with the current amount of financing and funding? And obviously, the sooner the better with them. But I don't know. I'm kind of losing a little bit of faith in the whole situation, to be honest with you, because, you know, again, it's just a very disappointing turn of events over there. And, you know, the more you see about it, the more you question. And in fact, I'll be honest with you, the whole area, I had a discussion, and I think this is your area too, with a gentleman who was the former CEO of a generic pharmaceutical firm. And we were talking about how there's just no way, in his opinion, that generics can make money moving in the future. You know, with the incredible cost of R&D overall, even for the generics, and then you add in, like, India, the various firms there that are doing it at just nothing compared to what it costs to do here. I mean, his case is there's just no money in it anymore.
Yep, and generic pharmaceutical company analysts will tell you the other problem is that pushes down price even further, is that there are so many companies that jump right into the pool as soon as they're able to, you know, once the exclusivity period has run out, that, you know, there's 8 or 10 companies making the exact same generic drug. So what does that do to price?
Exactly. I don't know. It is very hard. I'm very hard pressed with the current, you know, again, with the Democrats potentially coming to office. That's not a fait accompli either. But, you know, with kind of the environment that we have right now, and then you question also with the markets that we have, you know, how willing will people be to give money to new potential unproven things. And I don't know. It just seems a little bit concerning to me.
Some analysts say that Democrats are better for biotech innovation. And obviously, even Senator John McCain, many believe, will be just as good in terms of Let's look at specifically the area of stem cell research,
right,
because
yeah,
he's on record as supporting that. So you're going to see a lot of these teeny weeny baby biotechs, as I call them, you know, that play in that stem cell area that could potentially benefit from whoever's the next president, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican.
So let's just finish on this. I think that stem cells, again, have great promise. I've always questioned how we currently will not allow stem cell research because it's supposedly, with my fingers quoting, you know, killing babies and potential fetuses and all that. But meanwhile, we send soldiers off to war to die. So there's that quandary I have and that kind of that paradigm shift that I just, or paradigm I don't, you know, an oxymoron, if you will, whatever you want to call it. It just doesn't work for me. But where is the play right now? What's looking good? Who's looking good?
In terms of?
Anything biotech, I'll take anything.
You'll
I'll
take anything biotech. You know, I'll do a blatant plug for my blog, farmersmarket.cnbc.com. But if you read it or if you watch my work on air, I really stay away from making anything that even resembles a stock recommendation or mm-hmm. a company recommendation. I just don't feel that as a journalist / reporter that's what I should be doing. I'm not an analyst. I'm just a reporter, and I let people read between the lines and digest the facts and make their own decisions. So I'm sorry to disappoint, but
so,
I'm not going to make any buy, sell, hold calls here.
Okay, good. So we're going to say, let me just wrap this up because I love that. I really do. So what you're telling me is you're a reporter, you tell the news, and you're not going to be the news, which is seemingly not exactly what has been the turn of events with news these days. And I think that is very admirable, no kidding. And I think it's great because then you have less bias, hopefully, and you have the opportunity to provide good service rather than trying to defend your reasoning. And I think that's really, no kidding, I think that's really great. And I think that we need many more people like you. So anybody out there that is interested in biotech, of course, CNBC has a great blog. And again, give that address out again.
So I wish I could take credit for what I think is a clever name, Pharma's Market, PHARMAS, pharmasmarket.cnbc.com.
Great. We'll put some links on the show notes and we'll be in touch. And thank you so much for joining us on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Thank you.
Coming up, the Zach Zone. New issues and IPOs. Ripe, ready, and researched.
The Zach Zone is sponsored by Newsflasher.com, a new way to view headline news from all the major news sources. Get a wide-angle view of all the hot topics making news by viewing just a single page. Newsflasher. It's as quick as a flash. Type the word newsflash, then the letter R.com, and see for yourself. The Zach Zone with Zachary Scheidt. Zach is a portfolio manager at Stearman Capital and blogs at ZachStocks.com.
Well, the big deal this week was that Visa priced. The stock was actually brought to market at $44 a share, which was above the $37 to $42 range. This shows just how hard the underwriters actually worked to get the demand up for this stock. And there were, in fact, plenty of buyers out there. In fact, there were so many buyers that the company, Visa, had to actually come back to market with more shares because the underwriters actually gave too much stock to their clients. So after pricing at $44, Visa immediately traded in the $60, actually as high as $68, in that range to start with, and closed the day somewhere around $57 a share. Thursday, however, the stock got on a roll and moved up higher to $64.14 is where it ended up closing. I'm sorry, $64.35 is where it closed. And that was in conjunction with a really positive market on the day, Thursday, coming into Easter weekend. And that's really a good sign for the new issues market. I really expect that now that Visa has priced and people have looked at this deal and seen that it's been done successfully, regardless of what you think about the long-term economic picture, IPOs are going to be priced over the next few weeks. Companies are going to see that Visa was able to get the deal done, and they're going to say, hey, I want some of this action. They're going to get in and get their stock priced. So who's going to benefit from this? Well, one thing that I think you have to look at is Blackstone. Blackstone is a private equity company. They have several different hedge funds, and more so they have private investment firms that are basically venture capital. And these venture capital investments are going to be looking to sell their IPO stock, and investors are going to make a good bit of money. Here's how it works. Blackstone actually has assets under management just like any traditional asset manager or mutual fund. However, they invest this money on an incentive basis as well as a management basis. So Blackstone is earning their management fees on a quarter-to-quarter basis, but that's not helping them very much at all. That's not where what investors are looking for. The deal is that when Blackstone takes these small companies and they hold them for long periods of time, and then they turn them out in an IPO process, Blackstone not only captures the gain of their own investment, but they also capture 20% of the gain of their investors' investments. So people who own part of the mutual funds that Blackstone runs end up paying Blackstone an incentive fee. This can be in the tens to hundreds of millions of dollars when these deals are priced. So look for companies like Blackstone and maybe Fortress Investment Group to benefit from this rise in new issues. Stay with us for the next week. We're going to have some more stocks to look at, stocks that have recently priced IPOs, as well as I'll run down the list of names that are coming to market. We should see several companies file over the next week or so that are anxious to get in on this improving environment. To stay on top of the names that I'm watching during the week, go ahead and come by and visit me at zachstocks.com. That's ZACHstocks.com. And we will circle back next week and talk more about what this means and how the market's looking. Thanks, Andrew.
Hey, Zach, great job. Thanks so much for that. And that's the Zach Zone. IPOs, new issues, we're going to have that as a regular feature. If you have any questions on any IPOs, just write us at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And we'll see if Zach can answer your questions. And so we're going to end on that note. That was a great interview with Mike Huckman of CNBC. You can check him out on his blog that he gave you. We'll have all the information on the show notes. So make sure to check that out. I also want to mention something else to you, and we'll close it up for the day. A good friend of mine has a great website. I want you to check this out. This is awesome. Newsflasher. NewsFlasher. Leave off the E. And if you want to find a place where you can find news all in kind of in just in one quick setting, fast. I mean, really fast. From the top line, from blogs, from just everywhere. It's a maker. He made the other site called Instant Bull. I want you to go check that out. I'll have the link again on the show notes, but this is really a great place. If you want to find news and you got to search around sometimes and look and maybe look at your Google page or your Yahoo page, this is going to be your homepage from now on. Is what I love it. I love it. Great research. So check that out. And finally, I'll say it again. Please go buy my book. TheDisciplinedInvestor.com has the information, or go to Amazon, go to Barnes & Noble. It's going to make some money for you. I could tell you that right now. Check it out. Keep the show going, because so many people are finding out so many things about investing that they maybe didn't know, or maybe they're not finding out things, but at least they're coming along to get entertained, hopefully, from me for a while. Spend a little time with me here. Otherwise, we'll be back next week. We have another couple of, you know, we have some great stuff coming up. Wow, we have Robert Reich coming up. I have Jordan Goodman coming up. Well, Bill Carr is coming up on an interview. I got, you know, I just got a notification. Oh, I got a great, I got, John Byrne from the from Business Week, the senior editor of over, he's a top guy over Business Week. He's going to come on very shortly, I think in the next 2 weeks. And there's so many people that have recently that I've been talking to recently that's coming on the show to spend some time with us. So make sure you stay subscribed. iTunes is a great place for you to do so. Go over there. And while you're at it, one more thing, since I'm in the asking, maybe it's a belated birthday present or something. Do me a favor, go post a review on iTunes for me. We want to try to bring that up to about 150 reviews, and that's my kind of my summertime goal, 150 reviews on iTunes. So go over to iTunes right now, post a review, whatever it is, be honest, and then I'll see you next week. Hopefully you saw all the information. If you have any questions, again, send it to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com, or you can call in toll-free, 877-623-8473. We'll see you real soon on the Disciplined Investor Podcast next week. Stick around. Lots more coming up. Thanks for being with me so far. Be well. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.